Chapter 12. Machine is able to do nearly all the business. Such a man goes through life almost ignorant of what happiness is. Everything he touches, everything he does, brings a misfortune upon him. You have seen such people? To that kind of a person, life is not an advantage, is it? It is only a disaster. Sometimes for an hour's happiness a man's machinery makes him pay years of misery. Don't you know that? It happens every now and then. I will give you a case or two presently. Now the people of your village are nothing to me, you know that, don't you? I did not like to speak out too flatly, so I said I had suspected it. Well, it is true that they are nothing to me. It is not possible that they should be. The difference between them and me is abysmal, immeasurable. They have no intellect. No intellect? Nothing that resembles it. At a future time I will examine what man calls his mind, and give you the details of that chaos, then you will see and understand. Men have nothing in common with me, there is no point of contact. They have foolish little feelings and foolish little vanities and impertinences and ambitions. Their foolish little life is but a laugh, a sigh, and extinction. And they have no sense. Only the moral sense. I will show you what I mean. Here is a red spider, not so big as a pin's head. Can you imagine an elephant being interested in him, caring whether he is happy or isn't, or whether he is wealthy or poor, or whether his sweetheart returns his love or not, or whether his mother is sick or well, or whether he is looked up to in society or not, or whether his enemies will smite him, or his friends desert him, or whether his hopes will suffer blight or his political ambitions fail, or whether he shall die in the bosom of his family, or neglected and despised in a foreign land? These things can never be important to the elephant. They are nothing to him. He cannot shrink his sympathies to the microscopic size of them. Man is to me as the red spider is to the elephant. The elephant has nothing against the spider. He cannot get down to that remote level. I have nothing against man. The elephant is indifferent. I am indifferent. The elephant would not take the trouble to do the spider an ill turn. If he took the notion he might do him a good turn, if it came in his way and cost nothing. I have done men good service, but no ill turns. The elephant lives a century, the red spider a day. In power, intellect, and dignity the one creature is separated from the other by a distance which is simply astronomical. Yet in these, as in all qualities, man is immeasurably further below me than is the wee spider below the elephant. Man's mind clumsily and tediously and laboriously patches little trivialities together, and gets a result such as it is. My mind creates. Do you get the force of that? Creates anything it desires, and in a moment. Creates without material. Creates fluids, solids, colors, anything, everything out of the airy nothing which is called thought. A man imagines a silk thread, imagines a machine to make it, imagines a picture, then by weeks of labor embroiders it on canvas with the thread. I think the whole thing, and in a moment it is before you created. I think a poem, music, the record of a game of chess, anything, and it is there. This is the immortal mind, nothing is beyond its reach. Nothing can obstruct my vision. The rocks are transparent to me, and darkness is daylight. I do not need to open a book. I take the whole of its contents into my mind at a single glance, through the cover, and in a million years I could not forget a single word of it, or its place in the volume. Nothing goes on in the skull of man, bird, fish, insect, or other creature which can be hidden from me. I pierce the learned man's brain with a single glance, and the treasures which cost him 80 years to accumulate are mine. He can forget, and he does forget, but I retain. Now then, I perceive by your thoughts that you are understanding me fairly well. Let us proceed. Circumstances might so fall out that the elephant could like the spider, supposing he can see it, but he could not love it. His love is for his own kind, for his equals. An angel's love is sublime, adorable, divine, beyond the imagination of man, infinitely beyond it. but it is limited to his own august order. If it fell upon one of your race for only an instant, it would consume its object to ashes. No, we cannot love men, but we can be harmlessly indifferent to them. We can also like them, sometimes. I like you and the boys, I like Father Peter, and for your sakes I am doing all these things for the villagers. He saw that I was thinking a sarcasm, and he explained his position. I have wrought well for the villagers, though it does not look like it on the surface. Your race never know good fortune from ill. They are always mistaking the one for the other. It is because they cannot see into the future. What I am doing for the villagers will bear good fruit someday, in some cases to themselves, in others, to unborn generations of men. No one will ever know that I was the cause, but it will be nonetheless true, for all that. Among you boys you have a game. You stand a row of bricks on end a few inches apart. You push a brick, it knocks its neighbor over, the neighbor knocks over the next brick, and so on till all the row is prostrate. That is human life. A child's first act knocks over the initial brick, and the rest will follow inexorably. If you could see into the future, as I can, you would see everything that was going to happen to that creature, for nothing can change the order of its life after the first event has determined it. That is, nothing will change it, because each act unfailingly begets an act, that act begets another, and so on to the end, and the seer can look forward down the line, and see just when each act is to have birth, from cradle to grave. Does God order the career? Foreordain it? No. The man's circumstances and environment order it. His first act determines the second and all that follow after. But suppose, for argument's sake, that the man should skip one of these acts, an apparently trifling one, for instance. Suppose that it had been appointed, that on a certain day, at a certain hour and minute, and second and fraction of a second he should go to the well, and he didn't go. That man's career would change utterly, from that moment. Thence to the grave it would be wholly different from the career which his first act as a child had arranged for him. Indeed, it might be that, if he had gone to the well he would have ended his career on a throne, and that omitting to do it would set him upon a career that would lead to beggary, and a pauper's grave. For instance, if at any time, say in boyhood, Columbus had skipped the trifligest little link in the chain of acts projected and made inevitable by his first childish act, it would have changed his whole subsequent life, and he would have become a priest, and died obscure in an Italian village, and America would not have been discovered for 2 centuries afterward. I know this. To skip any one of the billion acts in Columbus's chain would have wholly changed his life. I have examined his billion of possible careers, and in only one of them occurs the discovery of America. You people do not suspect that all of your acts are of one size and importance, but it is true. To snatch at an appointed fly is as big with fate for you as is any other appointed act, as the conquering of a continent, for instance? Yes. Now then, no man ever does drop a link, the thing has never happened. Even when he is trying to make up his mind as to whether he will do a thing or not, that itself is a link, an act, and has its proper place in his chain. And when he finally decides an act, that also was the thing which he was absolutely certain to do. You see, now, that a man will never drop a link in his chain. He cannot. If he made up his mind to try, that project would itself be an unavoidable link, a thought bound to occur to him at that precise moment, and made certain by the first act of his babyhood. It seems so dismal. He is a prisoner for life, I said sorrowfully, and cannot get free. No, of himself he cannot get away from the consequences of his first childish act. But I can free him. I looked up wistfully. I have changed the careers of a number of your villagers. I tried to thank him, but found it difficult, and let it drop. I shall make some other changes. You know that little Lisa Brandt? Oh yes, everybody does. My mother says she is so sweet, and so lovely, that she is not like any other child. She says she will be the pride of the village when she grows up, and a title too, just as she is now. I shall change her future. Make it better? I asked. Yes. And I will change the future of Nicholas. I was glad, this time, and said, I don't need to ask about his case. You will be sure to do generously by him. It is my intention. Straight off I was building that great future of Nicky's in my imagination, and had already made a renowned general of him, and Hofmeister at the court, when I noticed that Satan was waiting for me to get ready to listen again. I was ashamed of having exposed my cheap imaginings to him, and was expecting some sarcasms, but it did not happen. He proceeded with his subject. Nicky's appointed life is 62 years. That's grand, I said. Lisa's 36. But, as I told you, I shall change their lives and those ages. 2 minutes and a quarter from now Nicholas will wake out of his sleep, and find the rain blowing in. It was appointed that he should turn over and go to sleep again. But I have appointed that he shall get up and close the window first. That trifle will change his career entirely. He will rise in the morning 2 minutes later than the chain of his life had appointed him to rise. By consequence, thenceforth nothing will ever happen to him in accordance with the details of the old chain. He took out his watch and sat looking at it a few moments, then said, Colin Nicholas has risen to close the window. His life has changed, his new career has begun. There will be consequences. It made me feel creepy, it was uncanny. But for this change certain things would happen 12 days from now. For instance, Nicholas would save Lisa from drowning. He would arrive on the scene at exactly the right moment, 4 minutes past 10, the long ago appointed instant of time, and the water would be shoal, the achievement easy and certain. But he will arrive some seconds too late now. Lisa will have struggled into deeper water. He will do his best, but both will drown. Oh, Satan, oh, dear Satan! I cried, with the tears rising in my eyes, save them. Don't let it happen. I can't bear to lose Nicholas. He is my loving playmate and friend. And think of Lisa's poor mother. I clung to him, and begged and pleaded, but he was not moved. He made me sit down again, and told me I must hear him out. I have changed Nicholas's life, and this has changed Lisa's. If I had not done this, Nicholas would save Lisa, then he would catch cold from his drenching. One of Erase's fantastic and desolating scarlet fevers would follow, with pathetic after effects. For 46 years he would lie in his bed a paralytic log, deaf, dumb, blind, and praying night and day for the blessed relief of death. Shall I change his life back? Oh no! Oh, not for the world! In charity and pity leave it as it is. It is best so. I could not have changed any other link in his life, and done him so good a service. He had a billion possible careers, but not one of them was worth living. They were charged full with miseries and disasters. But for my intervention he would do his brave deed 12 days from now, a deed begun and ended in 6 minutes, and get for all reward those 46 years of sorrow and suffering I told you of. It is one of the cases I was thinking of a while ago, when I said that sometimes an act which brings the actor an hour's happiness and self-satisfaction is paid for or punished by years of suffering. I wondered what poor little Lisa's early death would save her from. He answered the thought. From 10 years of pain and slow recovery from an accident, and then from 19 years pollution, shame, depravity, crime, ending with death at the hands of the executioner. 12 days hence she will die. Her mother would save her life if she could. Am I not kinder than her mother? Yes, oh, indeed yes, and wiser. Father Peter's case is coming on presently. He will be acquitted, through unassailable proofs of his innocence. Why, Satan, how can that be? Do you really think it? Indeed, I know it. His good name will be restored, and the rest of his life will be happy. I can believe it. To restore his good name will have that effect. His happiness will not proceed from that cause. I shall change his life that day, for his good. He will never know his good name has been restored. In my mind and modestly I asked for particulars, but Satan paid no attention to my thought. Next, my mind wandered to the astrologer, and I wondered where he might be. In the moon, said Satan, with a fleeting sound which I believed was a chuckle. I've got him on the cold side of it too. He doesn't know where he is, and is not having a pleasant time. Still, it is good enough for him, a good place for his star studies. I shall need him presently, then I shall bring him back, and possess him again. He has a long and cruel and odious life before him, but I will change that, for I have no feeling against him, and am quite willing to do him a kindness. I think I shall get him burned. He had such strange notions of kindness. But angels are made so, and do not know any better. Their ways are not like our ways, and, besides, human beings are nothing to them, they think they are only freaks. It seems to me odd that he should put the astrologer so far away. He could have dumped him in Germany just as well, where he would be handy. Far away? Said Satan. Oh, me no place is far away. Distance does not exist for me. The sun is less than 100 million miles from here, and the light that is falling upon us has taken 8 minutes to come. But I can make that flight, or any other, in a fraction of time so minute that it cannot be measured by a watch. I have but to think the journey, and it is accomplished. I held out my hand and said, the light lies upon it. Think it into a glass of wine, Satan. He did it. I drank the wine. Break the glass, he said. I broke it. There you see it is real. The villagers thought the brass balls were magic stuff, and as perishable as smoke. They were afraid to touch them. You are a curious lot, your race. But come along, I have business. I will put you to bed. Said and done. Then he was gone, but his voice came back to me through the rain and darkness saying, yes, tell Seppi, but no other. It was the answer to my thought. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.